is probabilities. So in particular, what we are going to try and do is define a truth value analog of probabilities. So what we want to do is to somehow replace probabilities with truth values in some topos, so that you can, from a truth value, you can actually recover a probability. And this is advantageous since once you have your topos structure of quantum theory, then you already have a way of computing truth values. And then from that, if we manage to define probabilities, you can define compute probabilities. So probabilities become secondary, and what the main thing is truth values. So the logical structure becomes the most important, which is what you want. So you don't really need the measurements, etc. You have your logical truth structure. So how do we do this? So probabilities are normally in a set 0, 1, right? It's a number. We somehow want to define probabilities in terms of truth values. So we want to find a topos such that the truth values in the topos are in one-to-one correspondence with probabilities. That's the aim. So how do we do this? So the first thing we consider is that we define the space, and you define a topology where these guys are open. So we're not going to consider r equal to 0. Will become clear later on, but if you do consider r equal to 0, then eventually you end up with probabilities, sorry, propositions which are false being trivially true. So that's why you don't consider that. And we don't consider this because this wouldn't define a topology. So we consider this. Once you have that, then this is your topological space. This is the topologies, well, open sets, sorry, and they're ordered by inclusion. So you end up with a category which has an Alexandrov topology. So it's a poset. Ordered by inclusion. So you have a category, okay. Now, as a standard result, that if you have a topological space X and you define the category of open sets, this is a Hating algebra. And this guy is actually isomorphic to this Hating algebra. To see this, so consider this a poset, right? So these are your main open sets, right? Being a poset, then this guy is equivalent So an element here would be a map I'll just write such a for a context. This goes to gamma of, well, this is just a singleton. And this is an element in here. So it's a sieve. And it will be something like this. Which is an open set. So each sieve is essentially an open set in here. So it turns out this two isomorphs. So for each context, you see it, right? And this is for all contexts. So this gamma for each context will pick out a sieve with this element here. So using this, now we have this, And this is just that we end up with. Okay. Now, what's the connection between this and this? So we somehow figured that one out. Was that? So you define this map. I should have done this before, but whatever. So that each element here is an open. And this is obviously 1-to-1, right? So combining this with this, you end up with so for probability, you get some open set in here, and because of that, you get something. And this is 1-to-1, this is an isomorphism. So, this assignment, I'll put an R here, is an injective assignment. So, to each truth value, to each probability, by going through this process, you can pick a unique truth value. There's a 1-to-1 correspondence. So in this topos here, which is not a topos we've been using so far, I'm aware of that, but in that topos, then you get what you are looking for. Okay, so this is a topos version of probabilities using this topos here. Okay, how do you use it? So we're going to try and see how this works, first in classical theory, which is a little easier, and then in quantum theory. Okay, you know this by heart, but in classical theory, so we're trying to, on the one hand, compute truth values, and on the other hand, compute probabilities, and see how they can be related. Okay, so now truth values, we know, are simply 1 and 0 otherwise, which in terms of the truth object, remember this guy here, which is all those sets such that S belongs to this guy. Then this guy here translated in zero otherwise. Okay, so this is a standard truth value. Okay, now what if we want to define a measure? We want to define a measure on our state space. So this is the logical side. Now we try and define probabilities. So we define a measure, and it's not, is on sub-objects of state space to 0, 1. So that it gets something and it gives a kind of size, or the measure of the subset. Now with respect to that measure, you can also write a truth object as follows. Well, it actually depends on R. So it's So what this tells you is all those subsets of your state space whose probability is greater or equal than a certain number. So this, you define an object with respect to some element in here, which, and with respect to a measure, and it tells you all those subsets which have a certain measure, a certain probability. Now, if you had to interpret logically, what this would mean all those propositions which, given a state, are true with a given probability, given a, sorry, a state, given a context. Okay, so now how do you combine these two things? So, first of all, okay, all this that I've said so far is all in sets. In order to be able to combine them, we need to go in that topos. So far in sets, we've defined on the one side truth values. Oh, well, let's just write on that side. So, is this the same as this? Yeah, just written in using the other terms. Okay, so on the one hand we have truth values, and on the other hand we have some probabilities, but everything here is still in set. So in order to define the topos analog of all this, we need to go in some topos other than set. And because this is the correct topos, we somehow have to go in there. So how do you do this? This is easy. So you define a map that takes your state space to this sheaf, which is in here. And how is defined? It's defined very simply. For each context, it is simply the entire state space. So it's the constant sheaf. And the maps are just identity maps. And in particular, you can define a map from your sub-objects as sets to sub-objects as sheaves. And again, all you get a set and you get a sheaf such that for all contexts, this guy is simply the constant. It's very easy, right? But this is one way of translating. But this you need because we need to be in here so that you can do this association. Okay, so now we are in there. So we have the following. Okay, what happens to this guy here? This now becomes a sheaf such that it's simply this guy. Sheaves mu on a set, that mu there. No? So now this becomes so when sheaves, so 0 R. is equal. So now this shifts will in there. So this truth value, let's go here, it's now translated here. So it's a sieve, and it is all those subcontexts such that S0 R prime belongs to 0 R prime blah blah blah. Let's the mu of S, well, just write as a set now, bigger equal than R. So now we've translated the logical aspect, well, also the measure, I suppose. We've translated the state space, the sub-objects, and this truth object to elements in here. And then we define the truth value for each context. And what this tells you is the context, well, the smaller context, such that this proposition is true with a given probability. Obviously, if you want to know what is just true classically, you get R equal to 1. Right? And that would just give you things that are true with probability 1 is true. If you want anything in between, then you get some smaller context. As you can see, you never get 0, 0. You never get R equal to 0. Because then that would be trivially satisfied. So you get false by this never being satisfied without the need of putting zero as R. So what this means of this is what we've done so far is the following. So we've started off classically, sets, we've defined a measure. And then we've defined a truth object, a truth value. Yes, I haven't told you what this map is, actually. I've told you that. Okay, so here we went the other way. So that way we haven't done it. That way we did this. So we defined this guy. We did this. And then we defined our usual truth object, truth values. Now, because this truth value was dependent on this new here, essentially what we did to define our truth values was define a map which was mu dependent, in the sense that you took a subobject and you defined the truth value with respect to this truth object. And because of how this truth object was defined, given a subobject, you can uniquely define the measure. So essentially this truth object is unique to this measure. So from a measure to this is a one-to-one. So what means that for each measure, you can define a truth value. So this is going this way. So we went the logical way first. We had everything in set theory. We defined it. Well, this is in. That's in sets. This is in here. we defined everything in the correct topos to use, in which there is this correspondence, and then we still haven't done the probability side. But once we're in this topos, we define truth value using this truth object here, which dependent on this measure. Now you go the other way, and you want to get the same thing. So this was the logical side, that was the probability side. So the first thing is to define this L. So you get an element in here. Then you know that to this element, because of that, is actually associated this guy. That doesn't matter now. Anyway, for each element R, then you get a section which is dependent on R somehow. This is a global element of this. So how is this guy defined? So gamma R. The contexts here. For each context, 0p. I think the notes I wrote exactly the other way around. Okay, in the notes I wrote p and r, whatever. Doesn't matter really. So for each context, this picks a singleton, and this gives you an element in here, which is gold. Gamma p of 0r. So what is this? What is a sieve? And it's defined as follows. Now it's defined in terms of cases. So if P is greater than R, greater or equal than R, then what this sieve is trying to tell you is all propositions or subsets at this context which are true with the probability P. That's what it's trying to tell you. Now if this context is smaller, then everything in the context is going to be true with probability P. This is going to be something. R prime. What belongs to. Such that. Can you read it then? Yeah, but it's redundant. But yeah, no, it is R. It's just that because of. I was trying to make it more clear because then you can't see the relation with P. But yeah, this is the right thing. But what you're considering here are probabilities P. So in this case, this is a sieve on R. Okay, all right. This is a sieve on R. Since you're considering proposition value with maximum, well, bigger or equal than P, everything here is bigger or equal than P. That's why I wrote P to just so the P depends, but not this is how it should be. So basically, you get the principal sieve. Because since this probability is smaller than this, anything here is satisfied, so this is the principal sieve here. If P is smaller than R, then you get all those subcontexts such that did I write it right here? Yeah. Such that R prime is smaller, like on P. Because now there will be things that are truer with probability greater, but you're just considering this probability. So those are not considered. And if p is equal to 0, empty. Now, easier way to write this, which, well, actually, that is the logical way of writing. It just really tells you, because you're considering truth values up to a certain probability, then you consider truth values up to a certain probability. However, if you consider this, this is actually the same as this. Right. So this is equivalent to just writing this. It's just shorter notation. It's exactly the same thing. Okay. So this is the map L. So going this way, we ended up with this thing here. What happens if you go the other way? So what happens if you do L of mu of some set? So there's an L of mu of S. So this mu of s is just a number, it will be our p here, right? So it's equal to L of mu of s. And then you do at each context. So L of mu of s at 0 r, that is equal again to 0 r prime. There are all mu s not p r. So you see that this guy is basically this. So what this means is that you can go the logical way. So you first get your sets, you define sheaves, and then define truth values in terms, obviously, of the appropriate truth object. Or you go the other way around. You first define your measure, and then you translate the measure in terms of the appropriate truth value in a topos, and you get exactly the same thing.
There's something weird about the fact that the appropriate subobjects of X should be a Boolean algebra, but we're somehow mapping this into a Hating algebra instead. But like when we do measures, like probability theory, the measurable subsets of a space always form a Boolean algebra.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I guess it's sigma algebra, but
yeah,
I think it's a Boolean algebra. Do we lose that structure when we map over to the truth values, because the truth values only form a Hating algebra?
Mm-hmm.
So,
oh, good question. I don't think you do, because this one is really injective and it preserves the ors. Okay, so this is a Hating algebra. Okay, but you go through this. Okay, so you go through this thing here. So this is all open sub-objects, that's for Hamiltonian algebra.
Mm-hmm.
So from here to here, you assume that to this you go to Hamiltonian algebra and then you get truth value.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure what it is.
I guess it depends on how do things like unions of, like, say your if you pick a sub, like a measurable subset of X that happens to be, you know, a disjoint union of things.
Oh,
how does that map through these things?
Oh, this respects everything.
Okay.
So this bunch of this, well, some number.
Okay.
That actually respects.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I thought we can do that. So to see that, yeah, I'll sort it from it. Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. So now you don't move that. So what, but yeah, if you just apply a definition, you can see immediately. So this guy here is equal to, I'm going to use the notation I just deleted. Well, yeah, the principle said four. For anything between and zero. The other one so you get this. Oh, this is the same. This now is 0 pi. Yeah. And 0. It is the same. Yeah, so this is the supremum of pi, and this is the same. So now it respects. In fact, this is the kind of logical side of sigma additivity, you could see it as that. Because, so this comes from the measure side, but because this commute, then it follows that on the other side you get so the logical translation of that property. Which is that. That way is the same as L O mu so this is the kind of logical aspect of so, yeah, this is just this and this is because the diagram commutes. Okay. Right. And this is all classical. Now let's do the quantum case. Whew, okay. But I might take more than an hour, actually. So. So we've seen classically how there is a correspondence between truth values and measures in such a way that these structures are preserved, which is the kind of analog of sigma additivity. So now we want to do this, but for the quantum case. So there are several problems. So, well, it probably. First is need to define a measure. On this guy. We need to enlarge, so we've seen here that the truth object eventually dependent on the measure and also on this R. So we have to change, somehow the truth object. And once you do that, then you have to be able to reconstruct the quantum analog of that diagram. So change the truth object. This will give us, different truth values. And then a third is you have to combine one and two. So as to get the quantum analog of that. Yeah? Okay. So the first thing is the measure. How do you define a measure on your state space? Now, normally measures are defined on measurable subsets, right? However, in this case, we have to choose what a measurable subset is, subobject of a state space. And to do that, we take ideas from classical physics. And here, the measure was defined on all subobjects, and these represented propositions. And since eventually we want to define truth values, it makes sense to define a measure on propositions, which in this case is subobjects. So somehow we need to define a measure on this, which then eventually relates to a logical structure. And we know the proposition here are Clopen subobjects of this guy. So we take that the concept of measurable subset means being a Clopen subobject. Now this is not proved that this is the only way, so we define on this to something. It can be the case that this measure can be enlarged to all subobjects of sigma. It is probably the case, it just hasn't been done. But the minimum requirement is that it is a measure on the Clopen subobjects. I think most probably you can enlarge it, but so far we just consider Clopen subobjects because we're mostly interested in this logical structure, and it makes sense considering we're considering propositions. So it's defined on this Clopen subobject, the state space, to something which we denote as follows. Okay, what is that? So first of all, well, this is global section of this Persheev. What is that Persheev? Here we're still in our original topos. Huh? We're still in here. We still haven't done the shift. Obviously, is it per sheaf or sheaf, whatever the poset says the same. Such that for each context, this guy gives you a collection of order reversing set. What am I doing? Sorry. Sets. Sorry. So this is a collection of order reversing maps. such that the morphisms are given by restriction. So you get, well, F gets restricted to F acting on a subalgebra. So now this guy goes from down arrow V to 0, 1. Now the reason why this is order reversing will become clear when eventually defining this map. But essentially what the reason you want order reversing is because if you have a proposition which is true with probability R, the collection of all this proposition true with probability R is going to be smaller than a collection of proposition true with probability less. So the higher you go up in probability, the less things will be true with that probability. You can't see it yet, but that is why you do order reversing. And you can see that this is, well, it's not equal at all, but of this guy, yeah? Of the real numbers. That was both order reversing, order preserving. Here, the order preserving is just zero. Okay, so given this, is it cursive? So given that Frisch-Schief, what is this measure? Now, it turns out that there exists a one-to-one correspondence between states and measures in the sense that given a state, some density matrix, you can define a unique measure, and given a measure, you can define a state. Where you can see this state as just state on as a density matrix or state on a von Neumann algebra. Maybe that might be easier, but anyway, there is a one-to-one correspondence. In the lecture notes, I write how to prove it here. I'm not going to do it. So that now we define a state-dependent measure, which is defined exactly the same way. So it's from Clopen subobjects to this guy. Now you'll see why this thing is important. And what it does is follows. It takes a subobject and it gives you a global element. So this global element is a map from here to this guy, such that for each context V, this is just a singleton, it picks out an element here. Which is defined as the measure, how do you define it? Or the trace, right? Oh, yeah, the measure of this. Well, I just wrote the same thing. Is equal to the trace of rho of p hat s of v. So with this, remember there was this correspondence between projection operators. There's p to right s p. and this is this P here. So what this measure does, it picks a subobject of your state space, and then it figures out what is the projection operator relative to that subobject for a given context, and then kind of gives the probability of that proposition given the state row. And it does this for all contexts. So now you see why there's this row dependence. Yeah? Now there's some properties which are worth saying of this mu, which show you that it is actually a well-defined measure. And this, I mean, to prove them, you just have to apply the definition in terms of the trace. So properties of mu. First is that row of the empty subobject for each context V from the definition is basically a trace of row of whatever proposition, zero, for all V. So the measure of the empty subobject is zero, is empty. The measure of the entire space for all V, you apply the definition, and that is simply trace of row of now the subset that corresponds to the entire space, such that is true, is just the proposition that corresponds to the entire subset is simply the identity. Then you get for two disjoint subobjects, so T and S, which are disjoint. So there'll be a context for which that, for all contexts that are disjoint. And then you obtain trace row of, well, this you can just put it in, yeah? So trace row of P hat T V or P hat S V. Now this or is P T plus P S minus P T P S. I don't know where to go. Oh, this goes up. So this is equal to trace of row dt plus b and s. Since the product is zero, so it's equal trace row pt plus trace row PS. So I'm just going to write here, I'll delete it, equal to mu row T plus mu row S. So for all these, it means that this thing is equal. In fact, you can prove even something more general as in the notes. I mean, you just have to apply the trace. So this is a special case of an even more general property. That is this one, yeah. Row of as for any subobject, not disjoint any. And then, I mean, if you apply the trace, then you can see that this is the case. Huh? I mean, all you need to do is, for each context, you just apply this definition. And then you just remember that the AND of projection operator is times, and the OR is P plus T minus P S P T. So these two cancel out. Anyways, all the lecture notes. Now, interesting thing is that now, since this guy here is a Haitian algebra, I suppose this would answer the question. Then you get actually less than this. So this is the dual difference. Yeah? Since this, without the measure, these two are. And then finally, the additivity property. New row. So for disjoint, pairwise disjoint, clope, and subobjects, you get this. Is equal to trace row of applying that thing because the pairwise disjoint is zero, so that becomes trace of sum, which is sum of trace. Which is sum of measures. So these are just properties that this measure has to define, have to, well, it's not that it has to satisfy, it just derived from the fact that it's defined like this. And all these are properties which are properties that you would want to measure to satisfy. Especially this one. Okay, now I said that given a state, we defined a measure. And this measure really relied on the state because of this trace definition here. But it turns out, the proof is in the lecture notes, that you can do the other way around. So you define an abstract measure which has certain properties which you want the measure to satisfy, and then you can show that you can derive a state. It's in the lecture notes, that's like 2 pages long, I'm not going to do it here. But I'll just write down the abstract definition of a measure. So a measure, now no state, is again from Clopen to this guy, is defined pretty much the same way, but now we don't invoke traces. So it's a global element. Such that for all V that belong to V of H, then mu S of V will be an element in there. No trace. And it has to satisfy two conditions. Mm-hmm. such that mu of this guy is 1 and the other is. Is what we proved that will hold it for the trace, so that mu rho. Sorry, no rho. Mu s o t plus mu s and t is equal to mu s plus 2. So given this abstract definition of a measure, I think I wrote it right, then you can eventually retrieve a state which now becomes, you see that? Now becomes measure dependent, and then you would get the same thing if you applied the trace. And it is in the lecture, it's just that it's 2 pages long. It's going to take forever. For this one, yes, you do. You can actually derive it. Yeah, you can from. So for each measure, you can define a probability measure in all projections, which will be sigma additive. And then this guy will get the sigma additivity by association to this. Yes, it's in the proof of. So you see that little m is a probability measure, which is additive. And because you define, where do I define it? Yeah, you associate. So you get at the level projection operator. So this little m in the proof is from P of H to 0, 1. And this is standard measure on projection operators. Then you associate this. For each context, you do this association. And then you can show it is at the level of projection operators, you can give the additivity. And you can show it by this identification. So you get kind of the same as this. Okay. So yeah, you can derive that property. Right. So that was the first point. So we managed to define a measure. So we kind of have that part. The quantum analog. Okay, the second task is to define, to change our truth object. I don't know where to go. Now this is a little bit complicated. So right, there's several problems with our original truth object. Now the first problem is as follows. Now remember, this guy was for each context. V was this. For density matrix, blah, 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 such a trace row of elements. Now, these are good. The only trouble is that the subobjects of this, of the dozenization pre-sheaf. And as such, they only consider Clopin subobjects which come from propositions, so only this type of Clopin subobjects. Now, a measure, which I'm, oh, thank God I didn't delete that one. So this guy is defined on all Clopin subobjects, not only those coming from dozenization. This guy only considers those coming from dozenization, because it's subobject dozenization pre-sheaf. So these are not good enough. You have to enlarge them so that there will be truth objects that will consider all Clopin subobjects of sigma, not just those coming from dozenization. Since we eventually want to associate a measure, the measures define all of them. So that's the first problem. The second problem is that when you define truth values with respect to this guy, so let's take this one, and so a truth value of some proposition was context V. So it's this is all the subcontext such that trace row of delta V hat V prime is equal to 1. Now, what happens with this guy is that because this is only required to be equal to 1, it does not distinguish between the various states. This truth value does not separate the density matrix. So what I mean is the following, that you can have, well, at least not for all contexts. It doesn't. It might do for some, but not for all. So you have this guy, some row, so half, a half, zero, zero, row one, 1, 4, 0, 0. Okay. Now the condition trace of row for some p to be equal to 1 only require that this p is bigger or equal to p hat 1, which was 1, 0, 0, 0, yeah, plus p hat 2, 0, 1, 1. And the same for this guy. It's exactly the same condition. So when you go here, all that this distinguishes is the kind of support. And this guy is exactly the same. So it cannot distinguish between this and this. So it does not separate the points. So it's not good. So we need to define A, something that's bigger, and be something that when put in here, somehow it can distinguish between these two. And it turns out that a way of separating the points is by replacing this with something that is R dependent. So something R, where R is the probabilities. So this is the same, now it comes with an R here, so that you get this actually distinguishes. So you want to somehow be able to define a truth object which has an R dependence, so that this is not just equal to 1, but it's a bit more refined condition, which then will enable you to distinguish the matrices. So how do you do this? So let's try first solving the first issue. Now, the first issue for this guy. So you have to define a truth object which is bigger so that it doesn't just consider subobjects coming from designization, but all Clopen subobjects. So for pure state, that's relatively easy. So you define something like this. Yeah, so for V. Okay, so what is this guy? This is simply the restriction of the sub of the presheaf acting on this that can be seen as a poset, a very trivial one, but still poset. Right? So it's a restriction of the sheaf only on this. So the objects are just now only the ones that are in here. Okay. So now this is obviously much bigger. So it tells you, it picks all those Clopen subobjects of this presheaf such that when you define that subobject at a given context, you would have the corresponding projection operator, and that is true. So you can see the difference, right? Here's just collection of projection operators such that this. Those are all possible subobjects such that when you identify for a context, you do this identification, the inverse, then you get a projection operator associated to that subobject in whatever context, and that is true. It's much bigger. In fact, you can show that your original one is actually an element of this guy. No, sorry. Here will be, this thing will be this original. Okay, for this one it was easy. What about for the density matrix? Now, when we enlarge it, we also want to somehow have it so that you get this truth value within R dependence. So we're trying to do both, or enlarge it and get this R dependence truth value. And you define this. No. You define this. This will give you precisely this truth value. Because now that will be translated in belongs to this guy. That's of context V. And this is precisely this. Because this is the condition for that to belong. Now, so there's a new truth value. It should be noted that so far, I just put it out there, right? And say, I mean, it's not, it doesn't come out of the formula, it's just a put an R. So what you end up is a one parameter family of this guy's and this guy's, each label bar. Now the next step is to join them together so this one parameter family becomes a context. So so that then you have some pre-sheaf. However, also at this point, it's interesting to know that I want to keep to note that. Well, this I can delete. Yeah, if say you have, well, there's more than one, yeah, because eventually they're going to be our probabilities. Then it turns out that, this is the order, why the order reversing. So what this tells you is that the subobjects, such that for each context, the proposition related to that subobject is true with probability R2, are less than those that are true with probability less. This is going to be connected to the order reversing, order preserving. I suppose it's very easy, right? No. And this is greater than R1, hence. Okay. So we have arrived at a situation that is as following. So we've managed to define truth values, which are sieves, which separate the density matrix, in terms of this new truth object. Then on the level of probabilities, remember we managed to, I deleted everything, didn't I? We managed to define this. The right like this, you start. So forget about this bit. This is what we're trying to get to. I never wrote it like this. So we have those sieves on one side, and then we had the probability sieves on the other. And we want to combine them somehow. And the way to do so, this has as context this, and this guy had this one parameter family thing, but it was just one parameter family, but this only had as context this V of H. So to combine them, you basically define this topos here. It's kind of an obvious choice, right? Now, these guys are both posets, so the topology is just the product, and the basic opens are just these guys. And this will be the topos to use at this level here. Not just this, because There's no quantum theory in there, there's just probabilities there. But that. So now aim is to find the topos analog of this using this topos here. So it's obvious why you want to choose that one, right? You're trying to combine the truth value of your formalism with probabilities. So in order for anything to talk in topos theory, they have to be onto the same topos, otherwise they can't really talk. So a common topos to both is here. So only here can you compare them. Okay. So now we figured what's the topos of the bottom part. So we have the top part here. This is in V of H, yeah? Yep. Oh, and this is here. We figured out the topos, so here has to be something. H times this guy. Still need to define what this is. And here you have to map this to the same, but in this topos. So we're missing this, we're missing everything, and this. Okay. So what is this guy here? So we want, I'll just call L also, this map. I use the same. Okay. So this is a map of H in algebra, isn't it? And this guy has a different topoi, but we'll consider H in algebra. So it picks a global element. And it maps it to some global element here. So this global element is this guy in this topos here now. I'm just going to write like this now. It's the same. So it gets a singleton and it gives an element. This this is going to be evaluated at a context in here. So I'll be evaluated at VR. Okay. And this is a sieve. So it's all, oh, I forgot. Right. So this is a poset. And it comes from the fact that both of them are posets. Right? So the ordering is this. If and only if. Yeah. Just to be precise, I didn't write it. Anyway, it was trivial. So. Guess how it's defined. So you can start seeing how eventually is going to be equal to this. In particular, imagine that here you have a unique. So you can define a cross section, which depends on a projection operator and on a matrix. This would be defined here as, I mean, you can perfectly do that as long as you pick an order reversing function, which it is. So you can define a section, which is defined like this, and it picks this. Perfectly justified. Now what happens if you put this and you act with an L, then you get kind of what you're looking for. Oh, in a way. You would get L of gamma at rho at now VR. That would be all those V prime, R prime, VR, such that trace of rho delta V prime is this. So it's just to show how you do eventually recover truth values for propositions. But this is true for all subobjects. Now I picked this as a particular example, but this you can define for all Clopen subobjects. And if you start from here.
Just a quick question. When you notes, when you define them at the time is L of gamma net, you have to assume gamma of B prime is bigger than R prime. So what it should be, I think it should be bad, so it matches the other definition.
Oops. See, no, sorry. Here, you mean?
Yeah.
See, sorry. I should really look set. It was a bit. Make any sense whatsoever. Okay. Okay. The property of this map is that, similar to this, it. I don't know if it should have been. This map here separates the points, so is injective. The proof is in the notes. And it also preserves, it also has this property exactly like here. It's all showed in the notes, but I'm a little tired here. Okay, so we figure out this bit. I mean, if you want, we'll do it later, but let's finish this bit. So let's go around this way. Well, you actually get this, but let's just go around that way. So you get something here. So this gives you a global element. There's a global element depending on this. So let's write like this. Oh, I deleted it. Oh, anyway. So this now is done here. Do you have to come in?
Sorry, we're just staring.
Oh, okay. You can stare. So this is done here. So the sieve. Such that now this applied to this guy, which. Yeah, that's trace of rho. No, wait, something wrong here. No. that's fine. S, sorry, P hat S of V prime. Same as this. If you remember the definition of a measure. Oh, in the lecture notes there should be a prime on those R's. 479 and 480. Greater than come?
On the R's.
Si, yeah. I just didn't realize. So here's because you remember the definition of measure, and this is a definition of this. So you pretty much end up with the truth value that you wanted, which did separate points. This you went through a probability measure and through a bijection of 18 algebras here. So here, this way is the probability way. This way is the truth values. So because here we started with something at topos, and we did get an element of a Hating algebra, but these two are in two different topoi. So although you can interpret it as the truth value, it's not really, because the truth value can only be given if you're talking in the same topos. So far it's just a mathematical reasoning in terms of probabilities, probability measure. Now, in order to give physical meaning, this has to be respected, has to be mimicked as a process of giving truth values in a topos. So first, this guy here. So we have to map this guy, this topos here. Well, I can delete this now. That map there. So we know that to define maps between topoi, you need geometric morphisms, and a source of geometric morphism is maps between the context categories. And here you do have a map, you have a projection map. You know this. And so you get geometric morphisms whose inverse image is what you're looking for. So now you have sigma. You can now map it to something here, which is defined. So it's very easy. So it basically ignores the R's, which you want them. I mean, you want this guy to be independent of R. There would be no sense or sort of. The R is the sigma projection one of this guy. That is easy. That's P1. Now what is this? Let's go here. Now, first of all, I should write this. Okay, I don't remember the definition of a truth object. How did I define it? I did define it as an element. Okay, I don't remember if I did it. Tell me if I already wrote this. So did I define this guy as an element of this? I don't remember. do this. Oh, but it's very easy. I'll just write. So it's this. It's the same as the one of before. Is the same, but now, so okay, yeah, no, that's what I did before. So before I'd written this, yeah, but this thing was arbitrary, was just a one parameter family. Now, if you go on this topos, this one parameter family of distinct objects actually becomes a unique one. So for each content, this is just this, but before this was an object, this was another object, etc., etc. Now they're all one big object. Okay. So that is done. Okay, and now the last bit is, last page, is this, the topos analog. We want this diagram to commute. We have all the bits. Now we need to fill in this guy. And we pick this and we define it as follows. I mean, to this they correspond a respective measure. Right? An object and it so I mean I could have also written so this because of the definition is the same as this yeah. So you can equally write mu here and mu here, whatever. But the idea is that now, for a measure, the top part, you can uniquely define this, which just picks a subobject and define the truth value of that subobject. And this thing commutes, so all the additivity property that you got from here, those guys here, well, the top was analog, you automatically have them also for the logical aspect because of commutativity of the diagram. So all this to the force, we managed to start with a problem. I'm going to bring it down. This is P1 star. So now you can show that going this way and going this way with the probability definitions, you get the same thing. So we start off with a probability measure, well-defined sigma, it had nice properties. And then we define this map, which was injective and that respected some nice properties. And we end up with a truth value, which was uniquely determine this probability measure. We went the other way. We went in the correct topos and then defined truth values. And you end up with the same. So this is this one-to-one correspondence. And I think that's quite nice because now you can retrieve probabilities by simply going the logical way. Going this way here. Whew. It is a little complicated, I have to admit. But I think, I don't know, if I think the classical is exactly, I mean, this is all very complicated, but it's exactly the same in classical because this is much easier to understand. But exactly the same. The only difference, obviously, is that the topos here changes. Exactly the same. And so this is how you, and because this guy separates the points, you can point, so, and this each roller is a mu, and this guy separates the points, you can really retrieve back this guy here from a truth value. So I think I quite like it. It puts logic at the fundamental level, which I think is quite nice, actually. Anyway, all the I've missed lots of proofs. They're all in the lecture notes. I think it might be saturated. I'm exhausted. And this is okay. There's actually this is not the latest. A paper came out, I think, a week ago on some top of stuff. So that I'm sorry. But yeah, this the group stuff and well, what just came out is very recent.
What was in the paper that just came out?
They show that this Haitian algebra, I haven't read it. Oops, this is recording. they show that the Haitian algebra is also, I mean, it is a Haitian algebra and it's also a co-Haitian algebra or something else. So that then you get two definitions of logical connectives. I just read the abstract. sorry. I don't really, but apparently, I don't know, you have two different negations, a different, I don't know quite what that brings to. No, I honestly didn't really, I didn't have time. I think maybe it was this week, actually. Oh. And then, I don't know, this is all one approach. Then there is actually another approach from Dutch guys, as you're more complicated. And I mean, this is kind of external. Because you have, okay, I forget about this for now. You have this as an external category of Haitian algebras, and then you define sheaves over it, etc., etc. What they do is that they take a topos, they take this, well, they take covariant ones, then they define an internal C-star algebra, they define internal abelian C-star algebras, and then they define the state space as the spectrum of this internal. No, there is a one-to-one cause it's quite interesting because you can go from one to another. It's actually, and they came, I think they thought about it in different ways. I don't know. They're mathematicians, but do stuff internally is very complicated because you have to then reason internally with the logic of a topos. I mean, here we proved everything externally. Really. But so, yeah, they coincide. It's kind of interesting. And that's kind of as far as the topos in physics literature goes.
So they have to construct a lot of the standard mathematical things within the topos.
Some papers I can't even go through them. It's embarrassing. But some papers I take. Oh, I don't understand.
On that side, the dynamics, like implementing group actions, should be easier. Once you have it set up, it should probably be more natural.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I mean,
For the
yeah,
internal topos, the actual.
but yeah, I mean, you, yeah, in a way, you can define an internal topological group. As well as what we did the other time, we had this external group. You can internalize that. You can actually easily define a Lie algebra, strangely enough. But they still haven't done that. But it is, I think if you get used to the internal reasoning, it's easier. You have to get used to it. Yeah, in a way, it probably should be more natural. Because once in, I mean, if you're doing everything in topos, I mean, you can map everything that we did to what they do. So yeah, there's still a lot of things to be done. would you guys think about this in physics? I mean, the one thing that really should be done is a concrete example. That is something that really should be done.
Like a quantum system?
Yeah. I mean, we've done C4 examples. There's actually no examples. Because I think you could do quite a lot now. Could have given this. Oh yeah, the main thing is still this dynamics. So the exercises that I gave, I'll email the solutions to get them. And the lecture notes, I think I gave you all of them.
Work on the project.